Hello and welcome to Solutions. This is the 10th episode of our fourth series of podcasts for solution-focused hypnotherapists, and I'm Cathy Eland.
And I'm Trevor Edels, and we're both experienced solution-focused hypnotherapists.
So this time we're looking at why you and everyone else are the way you and they are.
That's a big topic. So, Kathy, where should we start?
Well, indeed. Well, it all starts with the genes. As the egg and sperm fuse, your potential has been laid down, as have some other characteristics inherited from your parents and perhaps their parents through the power of epigenetics. But more on that later.
Okay, so a person's genes are called their genotype, and the genes that are expressed are called their phenotype. For example, their eye color depends on the expression of dominant genes, more than one. The child's genetic makeup controls, to a large extent, their potential size, strength, intelligence, and abilities, such as how musical or artistic they could be. Genes can also control their predisposition to depression and other mental health conditions, such as addiction, etc.
In fact, the DNA of any human beings is 99.9% identical. However, the 0.1% variation represents about 3.2 million base pairs. Now, if you think of the DNA molecule, the four bases are adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine. And adenine and thymine always pair together, and so do cytosine and guanine. So, although humans have more or less the same genes, they are polymorphisms, and that means two or more variant forms of a specific DNA sequence, which can result in differences in how they are expressed and even change their function. It's these small differences that make each person unique.
As soon as that tiny bundle of cells starts to burrow its way into its mother's uterus, its environment starts to affect that very small potential person. Is the mother fit and healthy? Is she stressed at work? Does she take drugs? Does she eat properly? And a million other factors can impact the developing child. In most cases, the mother is doing her best and everything works out perfectly. Fathers also play a part in the environment that the growing fetus finds itself. Stressful or absent fathers can make the mother's life harder and ultimately affect the life of that fetus. But again, most of the time, dads are doing their best too.
However, parents and other family members will be adapting their behaviour and thoughts to the environment they find themselves in, for example, the arrival of a new baby, and will have adapted their behaviour and thoughts throughout their life. And we'll look at this a little more further in the podcast.
Okay, once the baby is born, the environment plays an even bigger part in affecting the life of that child. How much space does that child have? Is it generally kept warm? Does it get enough sunlight? Does it have toys to play with? Does it get enough food? Does it receive unambiguous love? Do people talk to it? Do they sing to it? Do faces respond to it? How do they act around it?
And Dr. Schiff, working with rats, found that a mother's interaction with her offspring in the first few days affected how those offspring responded to stress for the rest of their lives, confidently and appropriately, or with anxiety and overreaction. It's not a stretch to assume that something very similar is true with humans.
A child tries out different behaviors and it adapts its actions to suit its environment. And soon those behaviors become its beliefs and its values. It might learn that big boys don't cry. It might learn that it is unwanted and not a good person. Or it might learn that its family love it and encourage it to try things like walking, talking, going on swings, playing musical instruments, drawing, cooking, etc.
And for those first couple of years, a child learns about its feelings, emotions, and moods. The child builds its self-esteem. And if something bad happens, like some other child takes that toy and plays with it instead of them, The child can quickly recover from the hurt and go back to its usual happy self. A child who has built up its self-esteem will be more resilient to events that take place in its life.
Children start to have habits, what they like to do, bedtime and morning routines, getting in the car, etc. And they develop their own habits like picking their nose, putting their books in size order, always putting on their left shoe first, etc. And they recognize that other people have thoughts and feelings too. That's theory of mind, which are sometimes different from their own.
Parents can co-regulate children, which means a soothing parent or other adult can help an upset child regain their usual equanimity quickly. As the child grows, it is able to regulate its own emotions better than a child that has been left to cry itself to sleep or overcome other upsets on its own. This emotional regulation is a useful skill to possess.
Children have strong bonds with their parents or primary caregivers, and they worry when those significant others aren't around them. The child's adaptation to their caregiver's absence can affect their relationships for life.
In fact, a child's earliest attachment relationships with their caregivers and the coping styles they develop to maintain them form a template for all that child's significant relationships throughout their life.
Sadly, not all people have a good childhood. They can face adversity in the form of psychological, physical, and sexual abuse. They can experience physical and emotional neglect. And they can live through household dysfunctions such as alcohol or drug abuse in the home, death of a primary caregiver, or divorce, depression, or mental illness in the home, violence, or a household member being sent to prison, etc. All of these can have an enormous impact on a young child, both in terms of their physical development and their mental development. They need to adapt their behavior to whatever situation they're facing at home. The child may be rejected by its primary caregivers. The home may be full of criticism, humiliation, and bullying. All of these things can be traumatizing and lead the child to adapt their behavior and thinking in order to survive the circumstances they find themselves in.
Alternatively, the child may grow up in a home that is caring and feels safe. The child is relaxed when at home. They feel loved and respected. These children will adapt differently to their different environment. In addition, early nurturing and warmth have long-lasting positive effects on mental health well into adulthood.
Life at home, at nursery, then at school, help to instill the local culture into a child. They will learn, for example, that hitting is wrong or that you have to stand up for yourself at all times. They will learn that women are equal to men or that women are second-class citizens and all the other cultural norms of that particular society. They will also be impacted by the kinds of health and social services that are available to them and their family. The wealth of their primary carer will impact on their clothes and toys and games that they have available to them. This can have an impact when they're at school and everyone else seems to get a particularly desirable toy for Christmas and their parents can't afford it. Or other children get the latest phone or other gadget and they can't afford it. And they will adapt to the world they find themselves in.
And in terms of brain waves, children up to the age of 2 have primarily delta waves. That's the slowest brain wave, which is about 0.5 to 4 hertz, the ones usually associated with sleep. Now, from the age of 2 to 7, a child's brain waves are mainly theta, which are 4 to 6 hertz. Now, theta waves are experienced by adults when they are relaxed, meditating, or in a light sleep. It's also the brain wave level associated with trance, where the person's mind is open to suggestion. We know that. Therefore, what people say to a young child and the way they act with that young child can have a huge effect on the way that that child thinks and acts. And after the age of 7, it becomes harder to make changes to that child. Give me a child until he is seven, and I will give you the man, is a quote attributed to Aristotle Saint Ignatius Loyola, who founded the Jesuits and others. In terms of brain wavelengths, does seem to be true.
It also seems to be a time when a person's basic attitudes towards things have formed the way they think or feel about something or someone. There are various theories about personality development, Freud's five stages, Erikson's eight stages, and others. But clearly, a person's behavior and characteristics are being formed during these first 7 years. That's not to say they can't change as a child gets older, or even change in adulthood. After all, behavior and thinking are adaptations to the world a person finds themselves in. It's just that, arguably, they don't typically seem to change by much.
Yeah. And as children grow older, friends and what those friends think and say becomes more important than family. Teachers and their teaching styles and opinions of the child can have an impact on how successful the young person is at school. They influence the child's thinking and their opinion of themselves. Again, the child is adapting its behaviour and its thinking to fit into the social environment that it now finds itself in. And that in turn will affect the child's personality, how confident it feels, how motivated it is, and importantly, its attentional control.
During their formative years, children will recognize that they're good at some things, for example, running, maths, making people laugh, and there may be other things that they either aren't good at or receive no encouragement to try. These can lead to limiting beliefs that they hold for the rest of their life unless they take steps to change them. They may believe that they can't ride a bike or use a computer or cook, for example. Whatever they believe becomes part of their personality. So it makes sense to think of personality as an adaptation because it's a combination of traits and conditioned coping styles.
Human bodies have hormones acting in them all the time, but puberty is a particular obvious period of change as new hormones start to have an effect on a person's body, which can have an impact on how people treat them, which can affect the individual's self-esteem and their way that they think about themselves. And that can have an impact on their behaviour, which affects how people treat them. And the cycle goes round again.
Hormones are chemical messengers secreted by our endocrine glands. The everyday hormones we may be familiar with are adrenaline and cortisol, but other important ones include melatonin, insulin, estrogen, and testosterone. Almost all of a person's hormones affect their mood, emotions, and mental health in one way or another. According to Hans Selye, the most important stressors are emotional. B.S. McEwen's allostatic load refers to the wear and tear on the body from trying to maintain its internal equilibrium. The most widespread emotional triggers affecting a person are uncertainty, conflict, lack of control, and lack of information. And these all affect a person's thinking and behavior, which change by adapting to their new internal environment.
Now, we know long-term stress in a person's life increases anxiety or depression levels. It suppresses immunity, promotes inflammation, encourages cancer growth, increases blood pressure and blood clotting, increases abdominal obesity, and impairs cognitive and emotional circuits in the brain. People with stress-related disorders have a significant greater risk of autoimmune diseases. These then require some adaptation in the way a person behaves. Neurogenic inflammation, i.e., stress-induced inflammation, can be affected by also emotions.
All through a person's life, they're affected by how much sleep they get, how much exercise they take, and how much and the quality of the food they eat. Lack of sleep can make people eat more than they would normally. It can make them cognitively impaired. They find it harder to think, recall information, and learn anything new.
And exercise is often touted as a great way of burning off calories and getting fit. It is certainly good for your body and can result in the formation of new neurons in the brain. In tests, it doesn't seem to be a good way of losing weight.
Many people, for a variety of reasons, don't have the time to make traditional simple meals. They're very likely to find a packet with a great picture of something they like and stick the contents in the microwave. These foods typically are ultra-processed foods, UPFs, which contain a large number of ingredients that won't be found in a typical kitchen and which a person's body may not be able to digest. The food can impact on the person's gut biome, which can impact on their physical and mental health through the gut-brain axis or GBA, which can impact on how they behave.
Now, as children get older, they want to have more autonomy or agency in their life. They want to be able to choose what they do and when they do it. And they also want to feel competent in the things they do. And they can only get that feeling if people in their life, their friends, family, and significant others, such as teachers, celebrate their success. As adults, they feel the same, although as adults, it's usually bosses and life partners that have a significant impact on the sense of agency and competence. Additional significant other people in a person's life can be politicians, film stars, pop stars, sports stars, business leaders, social media influencers, and others. They can affect what a person thinks about and how they think of it. Whether something is good or something is bad, they can affect how a person votes, and that could affect what sort of government is elected or imposed on them. It could affect whether a country goes to war or suffers trade embargoes, as well as other things that can affect the quality of the life of that individual.
Throughout a person's life, diseases can play an important role. It's not just things like COVID-19, but in some parts of the world, diseases, some that children are typically vaccinated against in the West, can have a devastating effect, causing death to family and friends of children and adults alike. Again, a person will adapt to the situation in both their behaviour and their way of thinking about the world around them.
Now, we mentioned epigenetics earlier. This uses a process called methylation to turn genes on or off. DNA methylation is influenced by diet, exercise, stress, relationships, thoughts, nutritional status, toxins, sleep, infections, etc. And this is an example of how the body adapts to the world it finds itself in. And as also mentioned earlier, epigenetic changes in one generation can be inherited by the following generations.
Illness and loneliness can affect a person significantly, not only in what they can and can't do, their quality of life, but also in how long they live. The health services available to a person is important. In countries where healthcare is free at the point of delivery, people can be quickly helped and the illness can be dealt with. In countries where this isn't the case, people have to live with their illness and its consequences. They have to adapt by changing their behavior and thinking. The same is true with social services. Where social services are available, people have a better outcome. Where social services are unavailable or limited, people will have to adapt, again affecting their behavior and their thinking.
And in addition, of course, factors such as poverty, racism, urban blight impact a person's genetic and molecular function. They can cause telomeres or chromosomes to shorten. Now, telomeres are DNA sequences and proteins at the ends of chromosomes that protect the ends of the chromosomes from damage. Shorter telomeres have been associated with increased incidence of disease and poor survival, i.e., people die younger.
For most adults, their view of themselves is highly influenced not just by what happened to them, but how they remember what happened to them. Memories play an important part in how an individual sees themselves and their role in the world. If they remember their failures rather than their successes, then they will expect to fail when trying something new or when being assigned a task at work. On the other hand, if a person remembers their successes more than their failures, then they will expect success. Their thinking will affect their behavior, and that will affect how they feel about themselves and the world in general. It will affect their model of the world, which in turn will affect which memories come to mind when they are in a position where they need to do something new.
Similarly, that if they remember being fearful in a similar situation in the past and having survived the situation, which they must have to be in the current situation remembering it, they will use the same successful strategy again. It's the same with people who get angry or violent. If the strategy worked in the past, they'll use it again. Having perhaps tried other strategies in the past, this is the one, the adaptation that works for them. So emotions lead to adaptations to different types of environment, and that's why people behave the way they do.
People have different needs at different times. Some are very basic, like needing to eat or drink or warmth or go to the toilet. Other needs are things like needing to feel loved or to have friends and a sense of belonging. Some people need to have power, and some need to have significant achievements or mastery of something. That's according to David McClelland. Tony Robinson's list of needs includes certainty, uncertainty, variety, significance, connection, love, growth, and contribution. Abraham Maslow had his famous triangle of needs going from survive to thrive. Whatever their actual needs are, trying to satisfy them can motivate people to do or not do things, and satisfying those needs affect their behavior.
Okay, so other lists of core needs include belonging, relatedness, connectedness,
Autonomy,
mastery or competence,
self-esteem,
trust, of course.
purpose or meaning.
As we said, trying to satisfy those needs motivates people to do something.
Yeah, changes in behavior can affect the chemicals in the brain. Neurotransmitters like dopamine, GABA, or gamma-aminobutyric acid, and glutamate, etc., may find their levels increasing or decreasing. And the available receptors for each of those neurotransmitters may increase or decrease. This can then further affect a person's behavior as they, for example, try to increase their dopamine levels, which is often found in people with various addictions and substance use disorders.
And one of the things that hypnotherapists talk about, of course, is stress. Some stress you can cope with, some makes you stronger, like training for a marathon, and some can be debilitating, leading to feeling overwhelmed and burnt out. Some stressful situations are temporary or ad hoc, but others seem to last for long periods of time.
Ad hoc situations can result in a person dealing with it and moving on with their life. Strategies people use in a stressful situation while still having their rational brains available are fawning or appeasing, where a person does and says anything that they're asked to in order to protect themselves.
Or they can play the clown and make people laugh, and this is called the funster response.
Or they can simply lie. This is called the fibbing response.
If those don't work, then the emotional brain will evoke the fight or flight response.
If that doesn't work, there's the freeze or collapse, which involves the vagus nerve.
And lastly is flopping, which is similar to freezing, except the body's floppy and the muscles have become loose.
For continued stress, a person can respond with anger, anxiety, and/or depression. These are obvious behaviors and are adaptations to the way of life for that person.
With adults spending time in natural environments such as parks, woodland, and green areas can lead to a decrease in stress, anxiety and depression, while also improving emotional well-being.
The famous bell-shaped curve applies to everybody. Each person is somewhere along the continuum for all things, such as height, weight, intelligence, happiness, stress, trauma, etc. Where they are in relation to other people who are significant in their life, or perhaps they think they are, can affect the person's behavior and their way of thinking. These are all adaptations to the environment that they find themselves in.
But when a person feels some kind of disconnection in their life, this might be alienation, loneliness, loss of meaning, and dislocation. It can lead to addiction, chronic illness, and mental health disorders. Why should people choose addiction? Well, it's because it takes them out of the person they have become. Think of it this way. Face-to-face interactions activate a child's sympathetic nervous system. These higher levels of activation correlate with the increased production of oxytocin, prolactin, endorphins, and dopamine. These are some of the same biochemical systems involved in addiction. So the addiction is replacing some of the things missing from the addict's life.
Compassion-focused therapy, CFT, says that instead of reacting to our internal world, thoughts, images, emotions, and sensations, and the external world, other people, and our environment, we can proactively pay attention to particular aspects of life and choose a compassionate response.
So, life is full of ups and downs. We know that. People adapt to them. Sometimes those adaptations are in the way a person behaves and thinks and can be positive. They help the person succeed in life and can be beneficial to the people around them. Sometimes those adaptations can be negative. For most people, most of the time, the adaptations are a mixture of both, hopefully, with more positive the negative ones.
And that's why people are how they are. And it's why a person's history is important in understanding who they are.
And of course, it's our job as solution-focused hypnotherapists to help people achieve their goals, which often involves them changing their thinking and their behavior. For example, they may want to stop smoking, which they started as a way of showing how grown up they were. Because a deterioration in their health now requires them to change that behaviour. Perhaps they have to give a presentation, and many years ago they came to believe they were not good at public speaking. They now have to acquire the confidence to stand in front of that crowd and speak confidently.
Therapists can help people make positive changes in their life. No matter what age they are, they can still adapt to changing situations. We can still teach old dogs new tricks. And even though, as solution-focused hypnotherapists, we don't spend time wondering how individual clients became the way they are, we focus on their present and their future. It's nice to see the bigger picture and understand how people get to be the way they are.
Well, I have to say, I found that really fascinating, and I hope you did too. And it gave you something to think about.
Yeah. Anyway, have a good Christmas, everybody.
Have a good Christmas, and it's goodbye from me, Cathy Eland.
And it's goodbye from me, Trevor Eddles.
Bye.
Bye.